Hello, this is Janet Gallen welcoming you to Love Letters Live. And as you know, because I've been saying it for so long, love letters are just your truth put to paper with compassion and love and delicacy, really, if you can, and mail to anybody at any time for any reason that you have a positive thought. Why not just jot it down, stamp it, and mail it, and you may be amazed at the results. Today's guest is Gail Williamson, who is a talent agent.
Mm-hmm.
I tell you what, let me just go to you and you say it because you'll do it better.
I'm a talent agent at Kazarian Majors Ruskin and Associates in Studio City, California, and I work in the diversity department, and it's specifically actors with disabilities.
Now, you know, can you maybe let's talk about that for a minute, because that's something relatively new historically in the entertainment and film industry, is it not?
Well, I've been at it for 20 years.
Okay, so I'm calling that relatively in terms of all of moviedom.
Well, I mean, if you look back to Lon Chaney, he played a lot of disabled characters.
That's right.
So we've had disabled characters in film, but have we had disabled actors playing those disabled characters?
I think not.
Well, yeah. I think the only one you can really look back to in history is after World War II, Harold Russell, who was a double arm amputee.
Oh, I remember that movie.
Yeah.
Oh,
yeah. And
it was wonderful.
He got an Oscar for it.
Yes.
So we've dabbled in it. We've dabbled in it from the very beginning, but it still seems to be, I'm still seeing people, typical people hired to play a character with a disability, and that's what I'm trying to get away from. I'm trying to
How did you end up doing this?
Well, it started with my son. I have a son with Down syndrome, and when he was 11, he sort of backed into a commercial for Procter & Gamble.
How?
He was a Special Olympic runner, and that's what they were looking for.
Okay.
And he had such a good time, and there was such a positive reaction from the crew. In fact, one crew member really blew me away. There was the wardrobe woman was about 8.5 months pregnant. I mean, mm-hmm. It looked like she was going to deliver at any time.
Mm-hmm.
And at the end of the day, she said to me, you know, I think about the fact that, now this was in 1991.
Mm-hmm.
She says, I think about the fact that we think it's important to save the dolphins and the whales.
Oh, I agree.
Because of what they mm-hmm. do for our community and for us as individuals. And I see how Blair's changed everyone's life here today for the better. And yet our answer to Down syndrome right now is amniocentesis and termination.
Mm.
And it was interesting. And the picture got much broader.
Mm-hmm.
It was more about human rights. And
well, you touched on something that I feel a lot. And that is we are so clever and sensitive and aware about the environmental and creature needs of others. And we don't do the same job with ourselves in so many ways.
Yeah, there's a lot of self-love missing, I think.
Uh-huh, we treat our pets often better than we treat ourselves.
Yeah.
Yes, okay, so go ahead. So he backed into one commercial.
So he backed into that, and I tried to find him an agent, and no one was interested.
Oh.
I mean, at the time, Chris Burke, who has Down syndrome, was on Life Goes On, so I thought, well, maybe there's a half a chance that somebody would be interested. But that didn't come about. And along the way, I found the California Governor's Committee for Employment of People with Disabilities in their Media Access Office and began volunteering for them. Eventually turned that into a job and worked for off and on, well, pretty much on, but sometimes part-time, sometimes full, at the Media Access Office for 12 years.
Oh, okay. So now, did you start doing this? Were you the first person to do this? Because
no.
I know John Pazis is also...
No, the Media Access Office has been around for years. It was started by Fernfield, Lorene Arbus, and Terry Susan Hartman Squire.
And what was its original mission?
Its original mission was to find work for actors with disabilities.
Oh, so it was in the same field. Okay.
Yeah. And so then eventually, you know, time changed. In fact, you interviewed Gloria Castaneda.
I did. I love her.
Gloria
yes.
came and worked with me there,
yes,
and then I left,
yeah.
and she continued
uh-huh.
on. So, yeah, that was... The Media Access Office was probably the first movement in this area. Now,
and it's been very successful because there are a lot of talented people.
It has. You know, yes, we've had success. Yes, two steps forward, one step back.
So can you talk about that? What are the two steps forward and what would be the one step back?
Well, two steps forward, we have a group of personal experiences,
mm-hmm.
a group of guys with various disabilities who could play Iraqi war vets, interview and audition for a role in an upcoming series, and one of them gets it. That's lovely to have a series regular like that. Yeah. Two Steps Backwards, something's coming up for guys in wheelchairs. I call casting, asking when they can come in. They finally see them on a Monday. And on Tuesday, posted on IMDb, which is where all the actor information is posted, there's another actor who is an able-bodied actor who has on his IMDb page that he has the role. So obviously they were negotiating when my guys were auditioning.
And it would be nicer for you if they would just say that.
Well, it'd be nicer for me if they would see my guys before they've So now it's kind of like, well, we look at it on one hand that, well, it's good that at least they got seen by a casting director that may remember them. But to go in there under false pretenses, I mean, I've taken my son Blair.
That's the part I meant,
I take my son Blair sometimes on an audition, and he'll be the only one there with Down syndrome, and everybody else looks like Tom Cruise wearing overalls and a dopey look on their face because they're going to play an actor with a disability. And they're all watching Blair's every move before they go in on their audition. I mean, and then they can say, well, we saw someone, but, you know, they weren't right for the role.
That's double...
Yeah.
Painful.
Yeah, it is. It's pretty rough. I haven't had it happen too much.
How does Blair react to that when he sees that happening?
When this has happened to us, he was much younger, but I don't think he really realized what was going on. He's just so happy to get in the room and show what he can do. Yeah. It makes him very
happy. What can he do? What's he best at?
He's very good at improv.
Uh-huh.
He's very good at emotional work. He's been killed on CSI, so he's played a dead body. He had a nose job on Nip Tuck, and in the ending, he looks in a mirror and goes, oh, I look like my dad. And it's beautiful little scene.
So there are various degrees of ability within every disability.
There's spectrums on everything.
Yes. So what would you say his... abilities, I mean, how far does his go? If I may.
Yeah, that's fine. Academically, Blair is not the highest. Everyone assumes he reads and writes, which he does. Uh-huh. You know, he does to some extent, but not like some of his friends do. Some of his friends are really literate. They can read a book.
Mm-hmm.
Blair reads enough to find what he wants on the internet and to send me a note, mm-hmm. you know, that kind of thing. So academically, he's not where everyone else is, but he also has some vision issues, so that could be a part of it.
Uh-huh.
Street smarts? He's pretty on top of things. He knows what's going on, and he knows how to take care of himself and how to take care of things. And yeah, he's pretty good that way. He doesn't now, but for years he wore a goatee and he, you know, shaved
it
himself.
Oh, how old is he now? I never even thought that.
36 now.
Oh my goodness. Okay,
and,
you know, I pictured somebody younger for some reason
because I look so young.
Because you look so young, and I don't know, just somehow the way you say my son. And Oh, so he's a grown man. Okay.
He is a grown man, and he has a lot of grown man personality.
Sure,
now.
Sure. That's nice. So my other question is, I know a lot of disabled people, and the whole label makes me personally a little squirrely, because I can see so much that all the people I know can do, and it seems to me that... I just want to know what you think about this. I mean, the next normal thing to do would be to cast these actors in wheelchairs as just lawyers.
Amen.
Or
yeah, often I'm pitching that.
Really?
You know, we've had success this year with two non-traditional castings, a gal in a wheelchair.
There are lawyers in wheelchairs.
Yeah, there are. Oh, yeah. And I've had people look for lawyers in wheelchairs before. But to get them to change to that is the trick. Yeah, there's two students on MTV's Faking It that recur. One is in a wheelchair and one is a little person. And they were just written for roles to play high school students. Nothing to do with
the disability. It seems so silly on the face of it.
Yeah, I know. People just don't think about it. They don't get it. I mean, look at, you know, what we went through back in, was it the early 90s with the Grand Coalition with the NAACP and Nosotros and all those groups, because our pilot season that year had one African-American series regular and no other diversity in it or something like that. I could be remembering it wrong. But anyway, so we've been fighting this battle for diversity in film and television for years, and the last frontier sort of is performers with disabilities, them coming across. And part of the reason I think it's been easier for other groups, like the LGBTQ community, they've had people in the executive offices when they've been making these things move forward.
Okay.
You know, we don't have people with disabilities in the executive offices, at least not many. You know, we have a few with children, but I don't think it's even dawned on them yet because they're not looking for employment for those children. It's not dawning on them. But yeah, couldn't the next door neighbor be a little boy with Down syndrome or a little kid on crutches? You know, why couldn't, in fact, Peter Farrelly, wonderful producer, once said, "I never read a script that said Dad walked in the room and he was not blind."
Mm-hmm.
I thought that exactly.
Yes. Well, there's some, you know, that's the old story about the gladiator and the child who was reading about the gladiators. Mm-hmm. And said to his father, you know, how come the gladiators always win? And the father said, when the lions learn to write, you will get the other
story.
So, yes, having the executives in there. Diana Jordan made a point. There was a something I saw on the internet, and it was a collection of women, and I think it was maybe voting. And it was, I could have this all wrong, but the point is it's a collection of women, and it was, you know, we vote, and there was not one woman in a wheelchair.
Mm-hmm.
And it really stood out as peculiar.
Yeah.
Now that I know people.
Yeah. Well, I'm constantly.
And I wouldn't have thought of that 10 years ago.
Yeah, exactly. Isn't that nice that we're coming around? One of the nice things about what I do in having a department just for people with disabilities, you know, you might think, well, you know, I have a disability. I don't want to be in that disabled group. My goal is to eliminate my department, to make it so typical. But at this point, if you're in a wheelchair and you're in a typical group and they see a lawyer, well, they've already got five other guys not in a chair.
Okay.
So here you are, an actor, a little person in a wheelchair, deaf, blind, mm-hmm. and you're in a typical agency. And so that agent is submitting people to be this lawyer. And they've got maybe five guys that are typical guys who could do that. So they're going to think of them, and they're going to send them in.
Mm-hmm.
So at this point, they're not going to pitch the guy in the wheelchair, the guy who's blind, the guy who's deaf. They're just going to go with that. I, on the other hand, only have actors with disabilities. I see a lawyer, and I go, oh, I'm going to send the guy who's blind, the guy that's
mm-hmm.
deaf.
Mm-hmm.
You know, any of my actors that have the credits behind them to get that job, I'm in and the materials online that need to support it, I'm going to submit them. So at this point, being with a segregated group of disabled actors, actors with disabilities, it's a positive move right now.
I can see that.
It will not be someday.
Yes.
Someday it'll move on. In fact, I have one actor that really has kind of left me and is now, well, a couple of them that have left me and are in the typical theatrical department at KMR. The people in the theatrical department are submitting them non-traditionally as well. So they're working their way up out.
That's very nice.
And that's what it's about.
Yeah.
I'm the place to really promote it. The other cool thing is casting directors now know KMR has this department. So we did an episode of Switched at Birth where they didn't even put out breakdowns. Breakdowns are what they put out the roles that they're looking for.
Mm.
These are the roles we're looking for. Well, this was to be a whole school of children with disabilities and a child with a disability and a couple caregivers in the classroom and a parent of a child with a disability. And they just came to me and said, would you like to do this? And I said, yes, we can do that. And I happened to have a parent who was an actor. We sent him in for the parent role. We had some siblings that did the caregiver roles. So, you know, here's an opportunity to work that really didn't go out to anybody else in Hollywood
mm-hmm.
but me.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm starting to get some of those special things that come my way because people know I've got good, valuable talent that are going to come and deliver.
Yes. And people still tend to typecast in lots of areas, right?
Yes. I have a man who's a young man who's very beautiful, and he's missing digits.
Mm-hmm.
He says he has Ninja Turtle hands because he has three fingers.
Mm-hmm.
Whenever I submit him for something, oh, he's too pretty to have a disability.
Oh, excuse me.
Yeah. No, talk about typecast. He's so pretty, he can't possibly have a disability.
Well, Eduardo Barr, do you know him?
Very well.
Okay, so Eduardo Barr was talking about when he went out on an audition for a blind person, the response was, you don't look blind.
Yeah. Yeah, that's when you throw on your dark glasses.
And he said he went out and he got a cane and dark glasses, came back and said, do I look blind enough now? But yes. Oh, my goodness.
No, yeah. It's my young ladies with Down syndrome, and a lot of the little ones coming up, their mothers basically styled them. they are styled every day when they go out. They did not just throw on play clothes. And if
styled means attention to the outfit.
The hair, the lip glosses on, they're looking, they have a little bag to match their shoes. I mean, the whole bit. And or some of the older young women who are wearing, putting on their own makeup and stuff. If I get a headshot of them with a lot of makeup, I'll never get them on an audition because we're not looking for glamorous women with Down syndrome yet. We're looking for the kind of left behind sort of kind of story.
Something people will recognize as what you're.
Yeah. Best. So I'm saying. So I have to say to my girls, I love this. You look beautiful, but I need very little makeup. I need you looking very natural.
Yeah.
Because I've literally had casting directors look at headshots of women with Down syndrome with makeup and said, no, I don't want to see her. And it's like, come on.
That's so brutal.
Yeah, I know. But that's, I don't see a reason seeing her. She doesn't look enough like she has Down syndrome. Well, she's not the stereotypical.
Which is so odd because as a rule, when in that whole business, you take somebody who looks however he or she looks and then makeup.
Glam them up. Yeah.
Glam them up or glam them down or turn them into any of Lon Chaney's roles.
Right. But also, again, they're looking for pictures that look like that. I mean, if something calls for a homeless person, you better have a homeless headshot in your stockpile because, if you send in a good-looking, handsome headshot, they're not at all going to consider that person to play a homeless person. It's interesting that they, if you don't look as downtrodden as much as they want you to look, they can't imagine they could make you look
that
downtrodden.
Oh, so that's the thing. They can't imagine. And yet that whole industry is total imagine. Mm-hmm. Okay.
But headshots are a whole... casting directors are looking so quickly at headshots.
Oh, I see.
That they're not thinking creatively. This is, I don't know, I'll probably get some casting directors mad, angry with me.
It's all right.
But I literally, here's one told me once. He said, when I ask for a doctor and I open a page of submissions and there's 2,000 pictures there, my eye is drawn to the people in the white coats. Because they already look like doctors.
Good point.
To me.
Fair enough, really.
And this is time management here.
Yes.
So if you have the white coat on and you have the materials to back it up, you've got some tape that that you've worked before, chances are you'll probably get an audition for it. So you need to look a little bit like what
And then you're dealing with huge competition with the numbers alone.
Yes.
Which didn't used to be the case 50 years ago.
Yeah, when we used to.
Right.
Poke those headshots in an envelope and deliver them across the mail.
Okay, tell me something else about your family, because you said something before when we were talking about your sister's children.
Actually, my brother's children.
Your brother's children. Talk about this,
okay,
if you
I have two boys. Mm-hmm. They're now 40 and 36. My 40-year-old has two lovely wife and two children. But when they were 19 and 15, my sister-in-law had lost her life to Lou Gehrig's disease.
Oh, my.
And not long after that, a few years later, my brother died from melanoma.
Oh.
And so in 1994, my six nieces came to live with us.
How old were they?
They were 9 to 21.
Oh, my.
The two oldest ones were away at college at the time, but they each came and lived with us for 2 years after college. The third one is the only one that really didn't spend... She spent time visiting, but she never really lived with us. She established herself elsewhere. But all the kids came through the house, and it was interesting because my biggest fear in taking them in was that I was going to take my time away from Blair. Mm. Here at 15, Blair had all my time.
Mm-hmm.
But interestingly enough, I got very busy with the girls, but the girls created such an environment for Blair.
Oh, my goodness.
Really raised the bar for him. I mean, he had a great time with them. He gets women. He's been dating the same girl for almost 12 years.
Oh, my Lord,
that's
wonderful.
And I'm sure it's because he knows the woman thing.
Yes.
It doesn't bother him to deal with girls. So they did a wonderful job with him, and we enjoyed having them. It was
benefits where you least expect them.
Yeah, it was hard for everyone.
They were
very broken children.
Oh,
I mean, they'd lost everyone who they loved. They'd lost, so they weren't in a hurry to start loving anyone new.
Right.
They were respectful. They were lovely children. We had a good time. We had a lot of fun memories, but there was never the bond that you have with your own child, or a bond that you would have with a relative that. I think the bond was just not going to come because they'd had such horrible experiences with people they
loved.
And
that's how it was forever?
Yeah, we get little notes of thanks and understanding now that they're parents, things that they understand, that they didn't as children.
How old is that 9-year-old now?
So the 9-year-old is 30 now.
Oh, so everybody's,
So I would do it again in a heartbeat. I'd change a few things, of course, but...
Looking back, what would you change?
Just... I would give myself more patience. I was very scared through a lot of, I was scared of what would happen to my existing family. I was scared about them. So I think sometimes, and I'm not a big overreactor. I can think of like one time with each girl, I wish I'd been a little calmer. Mm-hmm. I had, you know, it's not like it was habitual, but I can think of one incident where I wish I hadn't come on that strong. I think we could have talked about it better then.
Don't you think most parents?
I think so.
Look back and find. I think so. And have you ever mentioned those things?
Where
you wished you had that? What did they say by turn?
Barely remember it themselves, you know, but to me it's a big deal. But I don't even hold that with the children that were my children that I gave birth to. I think it's because we didn't have the closer bond that I feel the bigger pain that I didn't come alongside.
It's also the reality that they had been so injured by what had happened.
Exactly. We knew that.
So,
you know, we accepted that every day. But, you know, and my darling husband, who took these girls in, taught four or five of them to drive a stick shift. I mean, it was amazing. But after we'd had them for a while, I said, you remember that little bank account we had at B of A? And he goes, yeah. And I said, it's gone. And he said, well, if you told me I could have bought daughters with them, I would have spent it a long time ago. So he was just so gracious.
Yeah, that's wonderful. That's even more.
Yeah.
Let me ask you about love letters, because I always do kind of tend to that. You said that you have written letters, and tell me about your...
I write letters. Because
what I want to say is if you were to write a love letter right now, who would it be to?
Oh, gosh. I don't know. I really don't know. We may have to talk longer before I think of...
Okay, go ahead.
...think of that. But I make it a point to, I text my clients, mm-hmm. you know, if my clients have a big day, I'll try to remember to text. A lot of them text me, so it's lovely I stay in touch with them. I mean, technology has made it so easy to communicate in so many ways.
Right.
I probably write, love letter, probably write it to my son and his family,
mm-hmm.
but my son Tim, who's 40, they just this summer moved to Georgia. I've had him and his family here. I've had Tim around except for a couple of years of college his whole life. So to go to lose them within 6 weeks, he took a promotion and was gone. And their two children, who are 4 and 5, and his lovely wife, who I really, really enjoy, that was rough.
Yes.
And we haven't, and yet good. I mean, it's the best thing that could have happened to them. This is going to give them a wonderful life. They've already started a wonderful life in Georgia.
Well, you know, I'm listening to you, and I can tell that you're the kind of person who prepares people to leave you and to go on, because you said that about your agency, that someday they won't need me.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
That seemed like a good thing to you.
Yes. Well, and my girls, I prepared them to leave me. And you know what? And this is what's so funny. After the girls, I started working for a Yorkie rescue, and people would say to me, how can you give up the dogs? And it was like, I know they're going to a place that's going to love them and actually be better than me. You know, I get to choose that place.
Yes.
But yes, I, as much as I would love to just gather everyone around me and hold them tight, I feel like a job as a human being is to prepare people to go on and go further.
And that's
and
a total generosity
more.
That is clearly a mark of you.
Well, and there's blessings in that, and there's positive reactions in that. I mean, watching my son go to this beautiful situation was lovely and wonderful. What's hard right now is we haven't yet established all the communication. Like we're talking on the weekends, but their kids are in bed when I get off work.
Yes.
So it's just kind of juggling that and getting into our rhythm and all of that. But so probably if I was going to spend time on a love letter, it would be to them, because we're not having as much flowing conversation as I'm used to normally.
Okay, I have a thought.
Okay.
Which I always have. But because you are a part of something historically important in the industry you work in, and not just that, but in humankind.
Thank you.
That wouldn't it be nice for someone someday to find letters or notes that you've written by hand and know something more about you and what went on in your area at the time you're working in it? In other words, where are people going to know about what you did and all that you said here? That's going to historically relevant.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm thinking is letters to, and you can keep copies today, so that's a nice thing, but handwriting is king. And whoever gets these letters, whoever touches these letters in 100 years, will be touching something that has felt the touch of your hand. Mm-hmm. There's a connection there that you don't get anywhere else.
You're right.
And just to drop a few of those, mm-hmm. a little paper trail of you. You know, mm-hmm. I look forward. I look down the line a lot because mm-hmm. I've had the experience with people of finding letters from 100 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
And it opens doors that people never knew about. Know. Or to Blair also.
Mm-hmm.
And the girls that you raised. And maybe a couple to yourself.
Well, I have quite a few things that I've written, some journal entries and uh-huh. things, so that's happening. But
that's nice.
Yeah, you always wonder who's going to care someday, you know?
People do.
They do. I mean, I literally, right now in my home, I've gone through and done a lot of cleaning and purging,
mm-hmm.
and anything I've hung on to, I've got a dresser drawer full of things
yes.
with little notes as to
yes.
what they are, because I figure my kids need to know what it is to decide if they want to get rid of it or not.
Yes.
Like this milk-stained little teeny tiny outfit is what Blair came home from the hospital
in.
Oh,
yes.
You decide.
Yes.
If you want to keep that
yes.
or not. So, yeah.
And then there's your grandchildren who are now in Georgia.
Yeah.
And that they're asleep by the time you get home. But a letter waiting for them after school.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And then, you know something? When they're grown-ups, they'll look back and they'll read those and they'll learn a little something extra about grandma.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Okay.
No,
I hope you do it.
I think I might.
Okay. Just somehow nice to talk about it, plant a seed. Well, thank you so much for doing this with me.
Oh, it's my pleasure.
I actually learned a lot today, which I'm always grateful for.
Well, thank you. Me too.
And until next time, this is Janet Gallen saying goodbye. And I just want to remind you, like I always do, if you think you need to wait for a special occasion to write a love letter, writing a love letter is a special occasion. You can sit there and just bathe in the positive for 15 minutes. And you're going to feel even the physical results right away. But what it does down the line is enormous. So I hope you do it. And yes, I've never come across one actually that hasn't been life-changing in some way.
Hmm.
Really nice. Okay, so until next time, talk to you later. Thank you for listening. Bye.